After that walk, it feels like, who needs a Dharma talk? So luckily today I have plenty of poetry. The talk is called No Credit. I was remembering when I was in elementary school, so probably I was about 7 years old. And we were playing a game with one of those red rubber balls that they only have at elementary school. Maybe only in America, I don't know. So there were two teams. And I think that the game was throwing the ball at each other. And if you hit someone, they were out. So I'm really bad in throwing. I was a soccer player, not a ball thrower. Even though I grew up with two brothers, I could never learn how to throw like a boy. But anyway, this one day, I made this amazing throw. And I got their best person out. And I was so surprised. First I was so surprised, and then I thought, wow, I just got that guy out. And I turned my back to the other team. I was like, and of course, that red ball got me right in the middle of the back. And I wasn't surprised. I was like, oh yeah, that's why you don't do that. It's never happened to me before, so my first time doing a good throw and then taking credit for it and getting right in the middle of my back. I can still feel it. So we've seen ourselves do this all day, every day. And it sometimes happens, for example, that meditation happens to us. And we're so surprised because it feels like it never happened to us before. And we turn around to our team and we're like, and we're not surprised. We're out. And it's really a good way to have a fun joke. We can see how funny we are every time. And the hypocrisy of it is just so funny, because we'll be, let's say, someone on the last retreat mentioned being in the dining room and being obsessed by how someone was not quiet enough. And so her mind was so loud with how noisy that person was. And she had to really hold herself back from going over to the person and say, can't you be quiet? So it just keeps exaggerating itself. We start by disconnecting from our own silence, blaming the other person for that, which they're just being themselves. We can still be in silence. So we disconnect from our own silence and blame the other person for it. And then we really, really have to hold ourselves back from going over there and actually breaking the silence outwardly and saying, can't you be quiet? So, hypocrisy is that, if you don't know that word. But basically, it's just the joke of us. And how we disconnect from what we were just loving so much, what we really were in love with, that silence. We leave it in order to blame someone for pushing us out of it, but we're the ones who left. So it so happened that this amazing throw came through me once in my life. And then turning around. And that turning around, so putting myself back into the picture, does have a lot to do with our team, like the other people. As soon as I come back in, I'm at the same moment bringing everyone else as an other in there. So just to see how funny this is, and how unnecessary. There's this one of these beautiful poems that I have today. Do you think I know what I'm doing? That for one breath or half breath, I belong to myself? That's a question, actually. Do you think I know what I'm doing? That for one breath or half breath, I belong to me? As much as a pen knows what it's writing, or the ball can guess where it's going next. We can start to get comfortable with this jumping back and forth that we do, to notice this transition where we make ourselves small. I belong to myself. I did the throw. I did the meditation. It's my silence. Don't break my silence, etc. And not belonging just to me, but belonging to everyone. Belonging, just belonging. So we talk a lot here about resting and relaxing. And probably many of us have had the chance to see sometimes how impossible it is to rest and to relax, even if I'm lying down doing nothing. We see how rest is not only about doing nothing physically. Rest has more to do with some other kind of quietness. So the Sufi poet and master Hafiz talks about us, talks to us, and says, rest. I don't have the poem here, but he says to us, please rest from all of your hard work of separation. All of your hard work of taking credit and making me and them. Them seeing me do it well or do it right or wrong. So resting is resting from this work of taking credit for what we didn't do. Resting is not taking credit for what we didn't do, but enjoying that which we can't make happen. Enjoying this flow that can come through, that does come through us. Enjoying the flow that does come through us also can stop us from our other kind of addiction. So our compulsion to take credit is there. We can't stop ourselves most of the time. But we also have this compulsion. We probably take the credit because we feel we need the credit. We feel unrich. We don't feel that all of this flow that can come through and that does come through, because it's not mine, because it doesn't belong to me, maybe it won't be enough. Maybe it won't still be there next moment. So we feel that we need extra credit from life. We need kind of, like when you play golf, and if you're as bad as I am at golf, this game where you have this club, and you hit this little white ball, and you use like tons and tons of beautiful, what used to be forest, and tons of water to keep the grass perfect. Yeah. So, you try to hit this little ball. And if you're really bad in golf, then they give you a handicap. It's called a handicap. So you get like a head start in front of everyone else who's much better than you. So sometimes we feel that we need that kind of credit, that handicap. We're so unrich that we have to get, you know, let me start before everyone else. And everyone else is better, so you have to wait and let me start first. So those are our kinds of separation that we play. That's our work. And when we allow this great flow of energy to come through, to see that it doesn't have to be mine, and also it's not mine, and also it's so rich when it's not mine, when I'm not there, it's so rich, we do find some rest and relaxation. And sometimes it's utter stillness of body and mind. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's action, creativity, in movement. So when that utter stillness is there, we can actually feel it's so refreshing also. There's a kind of creativity there as well. But sometimes that needs to actually move. So we've been talking a lot about trying to go in and not going out. And that can be confusing if we take it very literally. Sometimes what looks like going in is really going out. So when we think that we're meditating really well or really badly, it's really a going out, not actually a going in. When we're doing our walking meditation for other people, and how we think, I really think I'm really meditating well if I go really slowly. Or if I just stop and look up for a moment. It's going out, obviously. But even when we're inside doing the meditation, when we're there doing it, however finely and subtly, that separation is there, non-rest is happening. Too much order is happening. And sometimes the opposite is true. Sometimes what looks like going out is actually going in. So, like looking at the stars, when we're really looking at them, not showing that we're looking. And we just feel huge. We feel this inner expansiveness, non-limitation. And for many people also in the arts, many different kinds of arts, there's what seems to be a going out. Playing music, or playing with color, or a theater, or a dance, or whatever. Seems like it's outward engagement. But actually, for some people, it's really a way of getting out of the picture, so that this huge flow can really come through. Where it's just a pen writing. I've been surprised in the last few days to find myself tearing up garbage and pasting it together and making collage and making kind of like painting without paint, just with paper. It has been at times, art has been at times a part of my practice, but usually it's not. But here I'm staying up late, going into the garbage can. And I know that's the piece of paper that needs to go there. And then gluing it on. Denis had to go to town and get me another glue stick. It's been interesting playing with this form of collage. Do you understand this word collage? It's really clear how this great unlimited energy is fully in this specifics. So it's a paradox. This unlimited energy, this huge vastness and flow, is totally present in that strip of yellow paper, that shape there. And it's interesting also in this act of creation how much destruction is there. Just kind of two sides. So it has to be this shape and this color. It's not that that color has more and is better. It's just in that moment that full expression. So when we talk about don't go out, go in, we can easily get into a trap of being afraid of the specifics of our lives and ourselves. But it's been really interesting playing with collage and letting my eyes see things in a different way. So what is in the garbage can is not only garbage, but also texture and color and shape and expression of everything. Does that make any sense? Especially for those who don't do any art. We can feel we don't want to get involved or touch those little specifics, those limited little specifics. So in art, this color, this shape. In ourselves, all of those specifics that make us and make our day and our life. If we can let our kind of eyes really fall into the back of our head and see the specifics as each one a complete expression of wholeness in its limitation, in its being itself as it is. It's not a distraction or an obstacle in any way, in itself. It's fully itself. And when we start to connect that way with things, then garbage is not garbage, inside or outside. There's one Sanskrit text that I love that talks about how we actually need this personality to cook ourselves in. We need some specifics to work with. So we can't just say, let me just cut off from my personality and go in. It's actually the specifics of us that are the way we can really properly go in. Honestly go in. If we come from a place of feeling that we need credit, that we need a handicap, that we're kind of behind everyone else, so we need a head start, then we'll try to avoid our specifics. We'll try to avoid what we consider our garbage. We'll hope that someone else will kind of do that work for us. Somehow, to help each other is important, but not to do our work for each other. Letting each of us be. It doesn't mean leave everyone alone. Not being afraid of the specifics of our experience. The fullness of yellow as yellow, anger as anger. That kind of fullness is close to what the Buddha talked about as mindfulness. Many times I think we should just take out the word mind and we would get more of a sense of what the word is, just fullness. not getting more uptight about our experience, not worrying when we feel the call for yellow here, not feeling, well, that maybe I should save some of the yellow for later. And what if I just do it smaller? Or if I just take half? When the call is for that, the Buddha gives an image of mindfulness as a huge, basically like a really big bucket, that big, full of water. So full that if one more drop goes in the bucket, a drop will come out. So full. That kind of fullness is what is helpful, not the kind of getting uptight about whether I should or shouldn't be feeling what I'm feeling or thinking what I'm thinking. So full that when we move the arm, the foot is also in that movement, the belly is in that movement, the back is in that movement. There's a kind of yumminess. Does that word mean anything to you? Delicioso. Delicioso. Lecker. I don't know the Hebrew. What is Hebrew in for yummy?
Delicioso yummy.
They also say yummy. Yummy. I think they say, and now I hear people, yummy. Yes. The way we usually understand mindfulness is uptight and disconnected. My foot is not in my hand. And the way I understand mindfulness as this fullness, there's yumminess that happens. There is even a kind of sensuality, sexuality feeling that can be there. So if that comes first time and no one's mentioned that and it's not written in the Buddhist texts and whatever, then we usually feel like, whoa, I must be going the wrong way. And I would suggest it's a good encouragement. A friend who sometimes teaches with us, and I sometimes joke about walking meditation or just walking from your room to the food. So simple life is for me. Room, food, hall, walking, sitting. And we talk about the illegal walk. Walking, when it's full, fullness walking, you're not there. Walking is walking you. It definitely feels illegal. Probably is illegal. Good sign. Good love to break. I want to talk more about this kind of connection between this huge, wide, unlimited energy that flows through us and specific things. It works, there's a two-way kind of love affair between. So I've talked about how, although this is not all there is, this is fully expressing wide life energy. And also, by connecting fully to specifics, there's like an invitation for more and more sense of something greater. So here we are. And some of us have only been here, this is only the fifth day for some of us. Not very much time. Although it may feel like much too much time. And just by our trying to go inside, there's this huge atmosphere happening. And at any given time, in any particular moment, most of us will not feel consciously that atmosphere. But we are fully participating in inviting that atmosphere. Sometimes it's much easier to feel the atmosphere that happens by just us being in silence and doing our best. Nothing more than that. Sometimes if someone would come from outside, they feel, whoa, almost hard to get through, so thick. But while we're actually in it and participating in that invitation of the wide, we might not be actually conscious. We're just doing our thing. We're engaged with a specific breath. We're just a pen that doesn't know where it's going next, or a ball that doesn't know where it's going to be thrown next. Must be time for this is not one I was planning, but it's very nice. Also by Rumi, another Sufi. When you are with everyone but me, this is probably the wide speaking to us. When you are with everyone but me, you're with no one. When you are with no one but me, you're with everyone. Instead of being so bound up with everyone, be everyone. When you become that many, you're nothing, empty. I have many times crazy ideas, and my friends, when I say, uh-oh, I have another crazy idea, they say, okay, what is it? And this one is not too difficult, I think. But I'm asking anyone who wants to participate in an experiment. Today, the instructions for gentleness practice, loving kindness, metta practice were on the board. And it's really an interesting story how these teachings were first given. There were a group of people practicing who were willing to do their best to be a lot in silence and to try to go in. And they went to a particular forest. And after a while they felt very disturbed by the spirit of the forest. So this is part of a culture where a spirit is not something extraordinary, it's just another one of us. So the forest spirits were disturbing the practitioners, and they went back to the Buddha and said, we can't practice there, it's too disturbing. And of course, the Buddha said, go back to the forest. But send love, send friendship, send the force, the power of friendship, to all of the beings of the forest. And they were terrified because it wasn't just like a little bit disturbing, it was like kind of images of blood and bones and things that most of us have been dreaming about here, for our ages. So they were afraid, but they were more afraid of the Buddha, so they went back to the forest. And they did what he said. And very quickly, the forest spirits, of course, were so delighted to be getting love all the time that they did everything they could to help support the practitioners. So this ties in with what I'm saying in the sense of specific internal acts of trying to connect with appreciation for the forest, with gratitude to the trees. And if you like, loving the spirits of the forest within. And let's just see what happens. We have 5 days left. But we're many. Maybe just like once a day, half an hour, sending to all of these creatures around us and see what happens. In order to really see the fullness in the specific, we have to forget everything that we know. We have to find a way of resting from our difficult work of separation, of knowing so much. So, with the collage, being ready to see an envelope as a piece of paper, and to see a paper bag, not only as a container to put stuff in, but also as color and paper and texture. Color and form and texture. And there's another game I thought we could play just to get more of a feeling for this important work of resting from all of our knowing. Also, it's a game that I like. It's a game from a person whose practice is writing. She suggests trying to feel and think of words that you like the sound of, so it doesn't matter what the meaning is. You're tuning into the sound of the word. So usually we think of words as being only important because of what we understand them to mean. And the fact that we notice that we don't understand properly, that we all understand different things, we don't really pay attention to all of that. We think word means. So if anyone wants to just say a word from your own language or any language that you just like the sound, doesn't matter what it means. So she gives like an example of cucumber. And she says it's not like I like cucumber sandwiches, but she likes the sound of cucumber. It means too much. Anyone has a couple more, feel free.
Mm-hmm.
More lovely.
What got a woo?
One more? So you might have noticed in these days how much we limit ourselves by the meaning that we give to things, not only words, not only pieces of paper, but especially the things that we think are closer to home, things that are more about me. And there are really specific kind of domestic examples that are really important also to play with. So for some people in some cultures, my tea. is very specific in a very uptight kind of way. We have some friends who work at a relative hotel that received guests, especially from particular tea-loving cultures. And there was this huge tray that they had to bring if someone wanted tea at the end of their meal, for example. Tea at the end of a meal, kind of reference point that we have, that we build. Tea at the end of the meal, and then some people have to have the sugar in the cup first. Some people have to have the milk in the cup before the sugar. Some people need the water not too hot. Some people need it really hot, etc. So they have to bring a whole tray with all of the possible wishes and then do as they were told or let the people do. So enjoying my tea is totally fine. But sometimes we lose the possibility of enjoying my tea because it means too much, let's say. We lose contact with the tea, actually. We're actually just drinking our idea. We're actually not even drinking. We're thinking our idea. And the foot is not in the hand. So hearing this, it could be easy to feel that we have to stop enjoying what we already enjoy. And hopefully, I think you know us well enough now that that's probably not what I'm saying. But maybe if we could feel a longing to really enjoy what we already enjoy, to actually enjoy tea, to actually have some direct contact with tea. Of course, there are ways that we can take this sort of what we feel as more personally. We can take this kind of looking inside, so to speak. We can start to leave behind this kind of trails of reference points or what feels like safety or security. And feel the possibility of really enjoying. Just really noticing when you're really enjoying. You're mentioning in the interview group today how easy it is to forget that it's just great that we don't have to cook, clean the pot, and for some people the best part is they don't have to decide what to eat. And more than that, to actually enjoy eating. Possible. Sometimes it's more possible when we're not getting what we had hoped we would. Imagine if there really were croissant and espresso at breakfast. Peace and harmony among all of us out the window. Can I have three? So, just noticing whether our reference points are enjoyable. If there's joy in sticking to those things. Sticking to those things and building those things, constructing kind of safety places. Is this hard work that Hafiz is asking us to rest from? And this has wide implications. It's not just only about tea or enjoying breakfast. It has to do with how creativity and destruction are just two perspectives on one thing. So it means actually allowing death to come with us, to help us. To help us find out how wide we may be. This is a Rumi poem called Unmarked Boxes that I'm reading part of. Don't grieve. Don't be sad because of loss. Anything you lose comes round in another form. The child weaned, leaving mother's milk, now drinks wine and honey mixed. God's joy moves from unmarked box to unmarked box, from cell to cell, as rainwater down into flower bed, as roses up from ground. Now it looks like a plate of rice and fish. Now a cliff, very steep mountain, covered with vines. Now a horse being saddled. It, that's this wide joy, hides within these, till one day it cracks them open. I don't want to make anyone fearful. Hear what's behind what I say. And then he says, ta-ta-tum-tum, ta-tum, ta-da-dum. There's the light gold of wheat in the sun, and the gold of bread made from that wheat. I have neither. I'm only talking about them, as a town in the desert looks up at stars on a clear night. When he says, don't be sad, he doesn't mean don't be sad. He just means there's also a wider picture. There's a moment that this poet Mary Oliver speaks of that touched her very deeply, where she found a dead rabbit. And it was so beautiful that she couldn't do anything. She kept hoping it would come back to life. Till finally it was really smelling and, as she said, boiling. So finally she gave it a kind of ceremonial burial. And the very next day, one day later, she happened to find a little nest of mice completely lined in rabbit fur, totally soft. And she's talking about the same thing as Rumi. Letting this wider flow come through us and everything. So that when we connect to the bowl or the person or the emotion or the spaciousness, for the practice, that specific thing is fully expressing, is fully a doorway to this wideness, vastness. But it's also not that, or not only that. And if we start to say, my practice, my bowl, my anger, then we've lost the reason that we love that bowl and that person, and why that anger was alive and potential freedom. So it works both ways. Leaving behind some of our reference points, kind of created needs, not actual needs. Allows much more wide flow, much more potential for feeling connected and alive. So we mentioned in this interview group today, after talking about croissant and espresso, how easy it would be to suddenly be grateful to have food. Just the right little disaster. And suddenly rice is great. We can allow creativity, destruction, in other words, flow, from a wide perspective, where the dead rabbit's fur the next day is already home for a family. Where what I thought was my anger, the next day, next moment, next year, is clarity. And when it comes to my meditation, my silence, my concentration, we can really notice that when I think that it belongs to me, it no longer is what I wanted. It no longer is satisfying. It no longer is big flow. So we have to destroy the meditator so that meditation can happen. So sometimes it's more difficult for those of us with more years of experience to really let meditation happen. To let silence come through. And to be moved with restful stillness, restful action. Not being afraid that that specific action, really, your foot is in your hand, your whole being is in that stillness or in that action. That fullness is the invitation for that wiseness. Not to be afraid that if I just try that experiment that I thought of. Staying up late or getting up early, whatever. Getting up early will destroy the sleep. It will destroy also the negative habit energies that have taken over while we're asleep. It can feel like a moment of destruction. It might not feel like joy at first, but it can feel wide anyway, especially once we've actually gotten out of bed. Our intuition doesn't always work. Sometimes a good way, following intuition. Sometimes the reference points that we have are so strong, strongly built, that intuition is not able to break through. And we have to actually break through. We have to break that wall.
Slowly, slowly.
Realizing that we already belong here, and that resting is resting from trying to prove that we belong here. Resting is resting from myself, my commentary, etc. And that limitless richness keeps passing through. It turns out to be a different kind of responsibility that's hugely wide, much wider than I myself could carry. A kind of responsibility that's not actually to be carried, except carried along in the flow. We think of responsibility as a kind of curse and a heaviness or a way of proving ourselves or something that we're not ready for because we need that handicap. But letting the flow come through and this ability to respond, ability for from stillness, with the help of the foot, the hand, move. Without knowing, and without thinking that we know what the hell we're doing for one breath or one half breath. So as soon as we say, oh, that's what I'm doing, we've jumped out of the flow again. So not holding back and not pretending that we are unneeded. And also not taking credit. Mm-hmm. This is Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? Grasshopper is a little insect that hops on the grass. Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearm and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle doing nothing and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So it's just now 7. Mm-hmm. If there's a question, I can sit here for a few minutes and you can come forward.
Could I ask you what you meant about taking death with you?
Yeah. What I meant was come, so that people can also go if they want. It's another way of saying it's from the destruction side. Of saying, leaving behind the reference point and the meaning as the most important, as if those are the most important or only things. As if this, the function of this as a bell is more important than it being itself. So, from the wider perspective, where things are not just how I use them, this, I can, in a way, I can destroy the bell. This is one level of this. I can destroy the bell by using it as a knee cushion. Now it's a knee cushion, which I do sometimes, for example. Or, though I love this bell, if it would disappear somehow, which someday will happen, that would be just part of the flow. It wouldn't be my bell that someone took. So partly it's being willing to destroy, not to be too kind of uptight. And destroy means create. So it means destroy the sleep, or the sleepiness, or the not quite getting out of bed person, the person who doesn't get out of bed in the morning. Just destroy that person, get up. The reference point means who I think I am in that case. I think I sleep late. It's possible to destroy that person without destroying life, the wider life that includes death. It also means stepping really, really back so that more friendship is possible in many ways, not only friendship with the people I like, for example, but also I let myself to be used by all of these. I'm out of the way. And being out of the way, if it so happens that life is coming through saying something strong, it's not me expressing anger at you. It's friendship. So I didn't want to spell that out because it's very dangerous. Because then we can pretend, oh, it's just coming through me. And I have friends who live that way, and causes a lot of suffering. So it's letting the specific be full, but not fixed. Totally full, and maybe this is the last time I get to hold this bell. So I really hold it. Maybe this is my one wild and precious life. And any second, she said, death always comes too soon. That's the beginning. Does that give you more to go with in your own investigations?
I think I was afraid that what was the name of the poem?
Oh, sorry, yeah, Summer Day, the Summer Day. Where I found them?
Yeah, if I didn't even know.
Yeah, at the end of the retreat, you can post. Okay, enjoy your dinner.
There's a firefly in the hall right now.
Or it's